The doctor is in, the metablogger, Doc Searles, the diagnostician of the whole blogosphere. Doc, you're in love with this phrase by Jim Moore that the best networks win. I want to ask you very self-servingly, how do you become a great networker? And who does become a great networker and why?
I think it's just a matter of doing it. You know, if you've got something of value to add to any particular conversation, then if you add it the way the web is constructed, it's likely that somebody else is going to see it and respond to it and sort of pile on, as it were. I'm not sure. I mean, let me point to something. I don't know where it is on the web, and it might be out there somewhere, that Rollo May said a few years ago in a book on creativity. He said that that writers alone among all creative types suffered the illusion that the world really needed to hear what they had to say. and I think some of us are born writers, and in that sense, and I'm one of those. I'm one of those people who I have to say stuff. I have to write. And there are other people I know who were not born writers. But I think that born writers tend to be born networkers. At least if they like being pointed back at, I suppose the Thomas Pynchons of the world might not fall into that category because they value their privacy more than they might the linkage.
There's something about listeners listening too, and let me just toss it back to you and say why I think you're a great networker, and that is because you listen sensitively across a very wide range of blogs, and you've got your third ear going. You're not doing battle with everybody you disagree with, but you seem to be. There's a bit of the South Pacific sailor view that's reading the waves and the wind and the clouds and navigating towards something that he can't see. That's why I read you.
Well, it's interesting. I one of the things that I like about blogging is that it's first draft writing rather than final draft writing. I like putting out things that I'm thinking about rather than things that I've concluded. It takes a lot more energy to write a finished piece where your opinions are fully informed, or at least as fully informed as you can make them before you commit them to something that's going to be printed in ink and stored in an archive or in a library or whatever. I like the idea of following and floating ideas or thoughts or observations that other people, actually not so fond of the term, add value to, but also remark upon and increase our knowledge about. I think we're all in a... What we're doing is discovering a lot of stuff, and that's what's more interesting to me. I'm more interested in where we're going than where we are.
Well, exactly, and that's why I want to know what you're discovering. Do you sort of, as I read you, you pull the American imagination in a certain way, and you're trying to read the future. Is it sort of aggregating in all of those blogs you read? You tell us. I mean, what's ahead?
Well, it's interesting to me that this just occurred to me this morning that a lot of what we do in blogging is more like prophecy than about what's going to be than commentary on what is right now, at least for some of us. At least in those areas where I have a degree of participation, I feel qualified to issue some degree of some kind of prophecy, and oddly, politics is one of those right now. And it may just be seasonal. We're coming up on the 2004 presidential election, and I think for the first time we're seeing a new kind of networked politics that,
yes,
if all things go well, will be followed by networked governance.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, and I think we're seeing it most obviously with the John Dean campaign right now.
Howard Dean.
Yeah, but I'm not sure we're not going to see it in the George Bush campaign as well. President Bush had an enormous amount of support from the community we call war bloggers leading up to and during the most recent Gulf War. And I think a similar kind of thing might happen coming into the presidential election. But right now,
similar meaning what, Doc?
Well, I think he has a lot of support, and I think he has a lot of support on the web, and I think that there is especially a lot of intellectual support, a lot of thinking out loud about things. And
could I stop you right there and just puzzle with you? This question has not been answered to my satisfaction. The blogosphere was the best place to tune into the argument on the war. Much better than the Congress, much better than the New York Times.
Much better. It was the only place, as far as I could tell.
All right. It was a very good discussion, but with not a lot of effect, it seems to me. I wonder, in pro and con, and the case was made for the war better in a lot of those blogs than the case against the war.
But I think there was a great deal of effect, actually. On the pro-war side. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't prove it. I don't have any. I can't point immediately. I suppose if I did some research, I could, to any particular documents that might be involved. But I had a real sense from reading Andrew Sullivan and Glenn Reynolds and Stephen Den Best and a few other people in the war blogging community that they were at least to some degree plugged in, that they were something more than consonant with what was going on with the war effort at the White House and in the administration. I think that support was real and not just an amen corner that was disconnected. I think that there really was an effect there. I mean, I once jokingly wrote that Glenn Reynolds was secretly running the war, kind of like, I guess, who was it, PFC Wintergreen in Catch-22 was the guy who was actually running World War II, you know, in that novel. I think it's something similar to that was actually happening, that there was this kind of a rear guard or a blog guard of some sort that gave a lot of intellectual support to the war. And I have to say, for my part, as somebody who was not in favor of the war, I was very informed by what Sullivan and Reynolds and some of these other people were writing, even in my opposition to it. I mean, there was some very good thinking and very good information there.
I know what you mean. At the same time, the web, not necessarily blogs, but the web in general, MoveOn.org and many others, were the great arena, those in the streets of the big cities around the world, the great arena for the opposition to the war. That's what I meant, though, when I said, "Where was the effect?"
Well, I think it's too early to judge. Actually, I mean, there's, we have a, we being the U.S. I mean, in, on the web, the there's a much greater we than any particular nationality. But the U.S. and the coalition did manage to get rid of a regime, but they haven't rebuilt a country yet, and that's going to take a very long time. And that particular fact favors the people who are opposed to the war, frankly. I mean, and I'm seeing a lot of terrific stuff happening on the left, as it were, at this point.
Where are you seeing that opposition?
There's a terrific blog called Max Speak, by Max Sawicki, who's a think tank guy in D.C., Daily Kos, Eric Alterman, a few others. I think if I went looking around, which I sometimes do for thinking about what's happening on the war in general, those are some of the places that I go. Although, frankly, I don't go out looking for anything in particular at any given time. It's just as a matter of context here. It's important to understand for some people, and me especially, I think, because people think I put a lot more thought, frankly, into the blog than I do at any given time. I'm answering email in public often with the blog. It's avocational for me. This is the stuff.
My word.
It's important stuff very often, but it's water cooler stuff. It's coffee house stuff.
Well, no, you're poor mouthing here. Let me ask. Will
well,
in the long history
I mean,
of the
that may end up being more important in the long run than the professional stuff.
Let me ask. Will in the long history of the species, will the war in Iraq of 2003 and the rise of blogging be connected in some fashion?
I think they may be connected in some fashion, although I think that they're... But I would be reluctant to connect them closely. I think that they're coincidental, historically coincidental. I think they may be part of larger historical trends. But
did the war serve blogging? Did blogging do anything for or against or about the war?
I think in the long run it might, especially if we replace the current president, which I think there's a very good chance of doing. I really do. I think that the electorate is getting networked right now, thanks to blogging to a significant degree, and to the web and the net in general. I think that the internet is fast becoming the great commons that we've always on which democracy has always depended, and on around which governance takes place. And that, I think, is the really important trend. And I think the war may be a factor in the growth of that. I think a lot of people who felt voiceless during the planning stages of the war, and during that period last fall and this spring when we felt the war was so inevitable, without a great deal of public debate, are now rallying around John Dean and other Democratic candidates. I met Howard Dean. I think that we've always needed this commons, and now we have it. And this is something that the people around the Dean campaign have discovered first, and that's not to say others can't also discover it, but they're reaping enormous benefits from it, and it's not just in funding. I think we're seeing with the Dean campaign democracy at work like we've never seen it before, and I think that we're going to see it on Bush's side as well after a while. I think
more so than, say, in other very promising moments like John McCain or the anti-war movement in Vietnam.
Much more with John McCain. I don't know why, but I always sensed with McCain that he was going to implode when that was happening. And I think that there was...
He didn't implode. He just got beat in South Carolina.
Well, he altered that. I don't know. I don't really, in the absence of research and documentation and so forth, I can't really say, but
What's the Howard Dean difference?
I had the sense that it was winnable for McCain up to a point beyond which, I don't know, it just didn't happen. But regardless of the reasons, the circumstances were different. The net existed at that time, but it was not that popular. We did not have blogging tools. We did not have some of the standards that exist on the net now. There's something called RSS that allows anybody who posts something, that allows the post itself to be picked up like a radio signal and followed back to its source. And that's a new development with the net, and it has added enormous value to the net. It means if I write something, other people can find it rather quickly and get back to it. Or if somebody else writes something, or somebody else responds to what I write, that can be found very quickly. And that changes the dynamic enormously. It allows the conversations to collect. I hate the term aggregate because it sounds like it's only about numbers or size, and it's not. It's really about...
It means to build a crowd.
I mean, what attracts a crowd? I mean, if somebody has something to say, this kind of gets back to your first question. I think the way to become a good network is or something provocative to say, like when Jim Moore said the best network wins. What knocked me over about that was it just struck me instantly at a gut level that is so true, and it changed the meaning of network for me. It wasn't just an industrial organization that broadcasts. We think of a broadcast network like ABC or NBC or any of those. I mean, it's a network is a bunch of people who are in a conversation together about something, or who agree on something, or can connect with each other.
And know how to respond, too.
And know how to respond. It can rally quickly. I think that the Dean network right now is an enormously powerful thing. It's why Dean came out of nowhere. I mean, here's a former MD who's a former governor of Vermont who would have been, a thorn in the side of the leading candidate anointed by the mainstream media, and he's overtaking him. I mean, I think Kerry's out of here. I really do. I may be wrong, and it's only because I don't see Kerry in in the networked world. I mean, in the blogged world, or in the, and I don't mean to assume that that's the whole world, but that's one where people are talking, and not just talking, but carrying thinking forward. And I think one of the reasons it works for Dean is because his mind is not obviously closed. He's not a pile of policies and papers.
Let me just ask you, Doc, I haven't known you that long. Do you always vote with long shots? Are you a good predictor of campaigns?
Oh, yeah, I do. That's true. But voting with long shots and betting with long shots are different things. I tend to bet conservatively and root liberally, as it were. And I don't mean that politically. I mean that just in terms of temperament. I like underdogs. I like outsiders. I like you know, provocative radical types that can change my thinking.
So do I. I want to digress for a moment because I know you're interested in, so am I, and that's Technorati. Mm-hmm. Technorati lists 100 active zones of people's thinking in the blogosphere. It's this kind of giant substantive tapping of what's important, what's new in the world. I love it because it's sort of the alternative to those big New York Times editorial meetings which I've witnessed, in which the foreign editor, the national editor, the city editor, the sports editor, the business editor all come in and sort of fight for shares of page one, argue their case. You can go to Technorati and you can see what hundreds of thousands of smart, interesting, turned on, engaged people find gripping at the moment. You could map a page one beautifully from sorting that page.
Yeah, now the Technorati performs a number of services. The interesting thing is that it depends on this protocol I mentioned earlier called RSS for really simple syndication. And it follows what different bloggers are saying in respect to what others have also said.
Right.
Or in respect to what somebody has said in the paper. There's inbound links, top 100 recent blogs. There's a breaking news section on the left side that is what's happening in the mainstream papers and who's commenting most on those kinds of things. But bringing up the editorial meetings, I'm reminded of something Ken Lane, who's a terrific blogger and also a journalist, said. It's L-A-Y-N-E. He's at kenlane.com. He's with the L.A. Examiner right now, which is his creation with some other guys. Ken Lane, just a line he just tossed off. He said, "We can fact check your ass." it's a brilliant line because that's so much what blogging has done in respect to the mainstream media.
Amen.
But what's happening with Technorati, it isn't a matter. You see, there's a kind of a distrust and hostility to that line, "We can fact check your ass," because it kind of assumes, you know what, you're going to be wrong, and we're going to catch you at it, and we're going to talk about it, right? We're going to publish it. But within the blogosphere itself, it's more like we all get to edit each other's asses, and we all get to, you know, do. It's more than just copy editing, though. It's like each of us gets to be an op-ed page for everybody else.
Right.
It's one great big op-ed section, and one topic may be big for a while, and another topic may be big for a while. There aren't these, you know, it isn't that sports is big, you know, that we have to divide it up into the sports section and the living section, and the front section and the business section, you know, the general news section, or the wells as we call them in the business, the news well or the sports well. They're not contained. You know, it's what's important today may be less important tomorrow, and of course there's some things that are permanently important to some people.
But it gets the conversation out of the office. It forces us to listen to what's actually out there. The whole business becomes transparent, and I love that.
And we all participate in it. You see. That's really what the difference is. I mean, democracy is by its nature about participation, not about popularity. I mean, and in the elections, yes, it's about popularity to some degree, but even there, I mean, people may vote for somebody they don't like, but they think might be a better leader than somebody else. It's not really about popularity. Of course, we've been led to think that, but I think we're being unled in another direction right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's about authenticity as much as anything else.
Absolutely. I mean, if somebody is false, it's going to show.
Can I digress again? Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, who's seen the Clue Train lately? You were one of the critical authors of the Clue Train Manifesto, and you're credited with that famous line that markets are conversations. The book of what? 2000? Celebrated the Human Voice, which I loved. It's among the famous lines that hyperlinks subvert hierarchy.
David Weinberger's line, hyperlinks subvert hierarchy.
I love the line that people get better information from each other than from vendors.
You say that's democracy at work there.
Exactly. Okay, who's seen the Clue Train lately, and what's the clue?
Who's seeing it?
No, I mean, where has it, what stations has it rolled into?
Oh, I see. I should add as context there that the Clue Train Manifesto was, the name Clue Train was based on a joke. There's an old Silicon Valley epitaph that said the Clue Train stopped there 4 times a day for 10 years and it never took delivery. and I think that's, you know, in fact, the four of us, David Weinberger, Chris Locke, Rick Levine, and I were on the phone together when one of us brought up that particular joke, and then we looked to see if the Clue Train domain name was taken. It wasn't. We took it, and it was over. That was all the thought we put into it at that time. Since then, however, it's become common parlance and a useful construct.
But if there was a central idea in it or prophecy, it was that mass marketing was coming to an end because word of mouth was sacred again, and people had the mechanics, the machinery in the web to talk to each other as they hadn't before. Does it prove to be true or not?
Yes, well, I think it does. And I think it happens in different speeds in different areas. I mean, we really wrote Clue Train about business. You know, we said that networked markets get smarter faster than most companies. We also could have said it, you know, faster than most school systems or faster than most governments or just faster than most churches. You know, name your institution and a networked market will get smarter faster than that. That really was a core insight, and that's why I'm inclined to bet with the networked underdogs over the isolated overdogs. The hyperlinked underdogs are going to subvert the isolated overdogs every time, and that is I think a good way to bet. It's just the question is, you know, do you bet in the long term or the short? I mean, in the long term, I certainly think that's going to be the case, but anyway, to get back to your question, I think that there are places in politics right now we can say the Clue Train is stopping there. Obviously, the Clue Train is the Dean campaign. I've been told, you know, they're using that metaphor to go out and set up as many Clue Train terminals as they possibly can to gather as many clues as they possibly can. And in the course of that, they've got a guy in charge who's keeping his mind open as long as he can in the process. And oh, by the way, money comes in along with that.
Right,
which is a wonderful thing. I mean, thank you, PayPal, for making that possible.
if in all these discussions, Doc, is if the country gets networked, I want you to imagine. First of all, you know, will it be networked in time for 2004? And just a quick, give us a quick tour of what a networked citizenry would be like. You make it sound awfully wonderful.
Well, I actually think in the long run it's mundane. I think it's that we know that if we write a let's just look at it from the journalistic side, and I think of journalism in the little j sense of the word, you know, as a lot of people writing journals. That's all a weblog is. It's nothing more than a personal journal. But the nice thing about it is that one single voice with something substantive to say can get picked up by many others very easily. So, and all Technorati does is it's your listening device. Technorati
yes.
is a profoundly important listening device that anybody can use. And so, I think a networked polity is one in which there are many voices listening to many other voices, mostly with open minds. And I think that especially comes to play in governance. And there will be the time when it's, you know, what's important about government is how well they're listening to the RSSs that are the RSS notifications that are going out at some point in time. And I doubt there's any government right now doing that, but I think there will be. I think inevitably there will be.
Do you want a last word on the fate of RSS? It's a hot topic around the Berkmans.
It's a hot technical topic. It will be sorted out. I've I want to, you know, give credit to Dave Weiner, your first guest and fellow Berkman fellow there, for being a prime author of that and a prime driver of the conversation about it.
And I think now a prime conserver of it too.
And a kind of conserver of it, and because now Berkman is the conservatory. I'm not sure what the right noun
trustee,
is.
Trustee, I think, or something.
Trustee, whatever for the spec. What's important is what it does. I mean, the very. I mean, if you think about syndication in the older, more familiar sense of the word, that most of us get when we look at the funny pages and we see that, you know, such and such a cartoon is a product of the such and such syndicate and that it's syndicated. And you know, we'll see Doonesbury in some papers and not in other papers, and we'll know that that's because of something called syndication. Well, there's another kind of syndication that got invented along with RSS, which says anybody's voice can be heard by anybody thanks to this. And this is a value added to the net that has three properties of the net that are vexatious to many people, but I think are very important. One is that nobody owns it, everybody can use it, and anybody can improve it. And all of the arguments about RSS are in the third category, is in the anybody can improve it variety. I mean, Dave, among others, have made the point that one of the reasons the net has succeeded the way it has is that some things are too simple to improve, and improving them means complicating them so only a few people use them, and that's where most of the problem comes in. But the concept itself is one that will prevail because it's too good a thing not to have. I mean, we want, you know, the presence of technorati in the world means that I can hear my, not my voice, but my ideas and the things that I point to that are worth remarking on, not only pointed back to, but carried forward. I mean, if I write something about old radio, which I did this morning, and some other people pick it up and say, oh, yes, and this other thing, and another person, you know, picks it up and says, oh, yes, and this other thing, they're doing that often through technorati, and it can do it through other instruments as well, but technorati is a very quick way to do that.
Dr. Searles, you are value-added on the net, if ever there was such a thing. You're my weatherman out there, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to gab about it, and I want to do it again. I don't want to wear out my welcome, but...
Oh, I don't want to wear out mine either.
You're like a guide out there.
Sometimes. I run off at the fingers on the blog, and I can run off at the mouth. And
no, just keep doing exactly what you're doing, and I'll be back.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Doc Searles, thank you.